Blog Talk Radio.
Trekkies around the world. With that song, that means it's time for another awesomely exciting episode of Stunt Trek with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the one, the only, the Leslie Hoffman. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
I'm doing okay. At least
that's
no
good.
Snow.
No snow up there. That's a good thing, right?
Right. Very good.
So that opening song that we hear at the beginning of every show is the perfect song for tonight's episode, because that song is the Vulcan fight song from A Mock Time, which is when Spock enters Ponfar and he goes down to battle Kirk to the death for the hand of his wife, T'Pring, I believe her name was. And after he kills Kirk, thinks he kills Kirk, he's no longer in Ponfar and doesn't want T'Pring and turns himself in for murder of his captain. And just to get a little emotional response, and he says, "Jim, you're alive!" And we find out that McCoy pulled the old switcheroo on him and dosed up Captain Kirk. Well, this time, Leslie's the one that actually gets to have some Ponfar action. Leslie was on the... Excuse me. Leslie was on Star Trek Voyager on an episode called Blood Fever. It was the 16th episode of the third season of Star Trek Voyager. It originally aired on February 5th, 1997. The onset of the Vulcan mating season throws the away team into turmoil when a Vulcan crew member's advances trigger B'Elanna Taurus's involuntary instincts. I wonder what those instincts were. Is that the one where she breaks the guy's nose? I think.
It's so long since I've seen the whole episode. I mean, she definitely rejected Tuvok.
Was it Tuvix or Tuvox? Or there was
no,
another Vulcan
no,
on
it
the
was Vorak. It was a... Actually, it was the son of a producer who wanted to be an actor, so they let him be this Vulcan.
Yeah, and he was a Maquis Vulcan, I believe, wasn't he?
I believe so. I really haven't gone into detail of the actor's history, but I feel like he was on a couple of episodes of Voyager.
But anyways, so Leslie has some interesting stories about going through Ponfar. Now, in this particular episode, most of the episodes of Voyager that Leslie appears on, she stunt doubles B'Elanna Taurus, which of course you do in this episode as well, correct?
Correct, yes.
And there's
actually,
one
I did
scene,
two different stunts for her.
Yeah, there's one scene in particular where you're climbing up the side of this cliff face that's hundreds and hundreds of feet down. And you're climbing up that cliff with Neelix. I think it was Neelix. I haven't seen this episode in a long time.
Well, no. Actually, it's going the other way down. They're coming down the cliff. It's Tom Paris and Neelix and Torres.
That's it, yep.
So Paris, Tom Paris has started ahead of them, and B'Elanna and Neelix are sort of going at the same pace below or above Tom Paris. Neelix's rope, or the pick that's holding the rope, lets go, and he falls. And this is the part I never understood, is they wanted me to reach out to him. But when you're repelling, you never let go. You never let go of the rope. Because if you're going to reach out and grab somebody, you're going down with them.
Not very efficient.
No. I mean, I could have, well, it might have been more dangerous to try to film the stunt this way, is that I think maybe what should have happened was Neelix, as he was falling, should have bumped into Torres, thus her losing her grip and falling as well. But like you say, if you watch the scene, it's that they have me reach out towards them.
I have to confess, I haven't seen this episode in a long, long, long time. I was hoping to have time to go back and watch it before the show, but I didn't get around. I was too busy getting our Trek Talking Show programmed and scheduled for Thursday night. I had to do some lawn work around the house. I just didn't get a chance to watch it, so it's not really fresh in my memory, so I apologize.
Oh, that's not a problem. If you go to either Ken Ford or the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation page, the clip is on those sites. So, I mean, for 30 seconds or whatever, you can see the scene that we're talking about.
And if you guys would like to call right now, live, that's right, we are live at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, right up here in New York and Vermont. And you can call 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. And you can talk to Leslie about her time on Voyager or on Deep Space Nine. She's been on both shows. And she'll be more than happy to answer your questions. Or if you just want to call and say hello. We love to hear from you guys. You guys are fans. Well, not you guys. You know, why would we be here? So the number is 646-668-2433. Give us a call right now. We'll be here for the next hour. And say hello to Leslie. Say hello to me. Just give us a call and tell us what you thought about Blood Fever or, you know, any of the other vast majority of movies and TV shows that Leslie has been in. We really, really would love to hear from you. 646-668-2433. 33 is the studio line and it's open right now. So please give us a call and say hello. I'm talking to you, David. I know you're listening. I know you're out there. Call right now, 646-668-2433 and say hello. So Leslie, are you actually a mountain climber yourself? Or is that part of your stunt woman training?
I think you asked it correctly. No, I'm not an avid climber. Do I know how to rappel because I was doing stunt work? Yes. There's a place called Stony Point out in the San Fernando Valley. And a bunch of stunt people always would go out there and practice rappelling. So I am efficient at rappelling. I mean, it wasn't that I took a stunt that I had no idea how to do. You have to rig the rope very specifically through a thing called a carabiner in front, and then you have your other hand, which you hold on just in front of the carabiner with one hand, usually your left. And then with your right hand, you have the rope kind of around, well, when I say around your waist, I don't mean all the way around. You know, I'm saying 180 degrees from your belly button to your spine. You have the rope around your waist that way, and your right hand is your brake. So you could actually let go with your left hand and still be standing sideways on the rock because, or did I just say it wrong? You can let go of your left hand because your right hand is your brake. You could actually stand on the rock as long as you're holding that rope behind your back, which I guess kind of comes into the next part of what happened with that particular stunt. Is like you say, I knew how to do the stunt, and the director had me do it several times, but then he didn't like the camera angle, so he said, could you move over about, you know, 3 feet to your right? Now, this was a cliff that was made on a soundstage, so it was about 20 feet tall. So I go over the edge of the cliff to, you know, get down into the position where I do the fall, and my foot goes into like this hole that they had created. You know, I don't mean a hole actually through the cliff, but like an indent. And my foot goes into this indent, and my leg collapsed on me. I just guess I wasn't ready for it. So I fall upside down with my, you know, with the, because the one knee has collapsed, but the rope fell over the top of my left leg, and the weight of my body, I couldn't get my foot out from underneath the rope. So I'm hanging upside down on this cliff, and all the people below are going, get her down, you know, blah, 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 blah. Anyways, the special effects man who was at the top of the cliff finally peeks over to see what everyone's screaming about. And I'm just, you know, like you say, I had my hand on the brake, or I wasn't going anywhere for two reasons, because my foot was underneath the rope, but I also had, you know, myself technically with the brake on. He peeks over to see what everyone's, you know, screaming about. And I said, could you get my foot loose, please? So he pulls up, you know, he stands up, and he pulls up on this rope. You know, he kind of, I think he kind of shook it. I don't think he had the actual weight, power to, you know, straight up lift the rope. You know, so he was able to kind of pull and jiggle it. And I got my foot out. And, you know, now they're saying, come on down, come on down, come on down. I'm going, no, I'm fine. Let's just do the stunt. I mean, if anything, I was embarrassed. It was so stupid to be hanging upside down. I mean, I wasn't going anywhere, but it was so stupid to be stuck like that. And so they allowed me to get into position, and we went ahead and filmed the stunt.
Now, it wasn't Neelix. It was obviously a stunt double, right?
George Colucci, Dennis Madelon's brother-in-law.
So he was the falling Neelix that you were supposed to catch.
Correct.
Now,
right.
What about Tom Paris? Was he a stunt double as well?
You know, he was a stunt double as well, but I don't think he was someone that I was familiar with. So at the moment I can't think who stunt doubled Paris. So I apologize for that, but it was definitely George Colucci being Neelix. He was Neelix's regular stunt double.
Also, so you guys all kind of like knew each other as your stunt characters?
Okay, rephrase that question again. You lost me.
So, like, Neelix had the same stunt double and Tom Paris had a stunt double, and B'Elanna Torres had you as her stunt double. So each actor had their own stunt person that stunt doubled that actor every time there was a stunt needed. So you guys kind of all knew each other as your stunt double person? Or were they different stunt people every time?
No. There are regular stunt doubles for certain people, but let's say somebody got a movie on Pirates of the Caribbean for 6 months or something like that. Of course they're going to take a six-month job and not wait around for a one-day job on a television show. So, yes, there are regular stunt doubles. Are they always the stunt double for the actor? No, they may have a different job that day. So in that case, Dennis has to hire somebody else that day. Or let's say there's a very special stunt. I'm giving away a horrible secret. Like, everyone talks about Wonder Woman. Well, there was an episode where Wonder Woman had to do a giant. I don't know if you know about the high bar and men's gymnastic, and there's a thing called a giant where you straight out body swing around the bar. Well, it was a man who did that stunt, and I used to have a picture of him dressed up as Wonder Woman, and he looked beautiful in his mustache.
That's stupid. That's like that scene in Spaceballs where they jump through the door and Princess Vespa
exactly.
got a mustache. You captured their stunt double. I thought that was just a funny part in the movie. I had no idea that it actually did something like that.
Well, it's funny, but it's also insulting because a lot of times, well, I shouldn't say a lot of times, there are times that male stunt coordinators would rather put their buddy in doubling a woman in the name of safety. And believe me, there's a stunt woman out there that can do rappelling, that can do a high fall, that can do a fire burn, that can drive a car. Don't tell me that there isn't a stunt woman that you know, is capable of doing it, or film the stunt differently so the stunt woman can do it.
I'm sure that Spice Williams could have done that. She's pretty muscular in Star Trek V.
No, she couldn't do a giant. I'd be shocked. A giant is... You look up Jim... Well, I'll try to find a clip of a guy doing a giant, and I'll send it to you. So you understand what a giant is. Even on the uneven parallel bars, women don't do giants. Well, you can't do a giant on an uneven parallel bar because you'd hit one of the bars. I mean, like you say, it's a full body extension swinging around one bar.
Wow. I mean, Linda Carter had a very... a feminine physique about her. So how'd they get a guy with a mustache to look like Linda Carter? What, did he wear a corset or something?
Who knows? Maybe she wasn't on the set that day. Maybe she was told only a man could do it. I don't know. I mean, the sad part is an actor or an actress really does have a say who their stunt double should be, but the stunt coordinator could technically override an actor. I mean, there's a stuntman, Dick Warlock. He was in Halloween. That's one of the most memorable things that he did was Halloween. He was actually signed into Kurt Russell's contract. If Kurt Russell was doing a movie way back when, it said, Dick Warlock is my stunt double. And it'd be nice if more actors and actresses would do that.
Wow, that's pretty cool. They can request their own stunt double.
Yeah, well, I mean, she didn't put me in her contract, but Wendy Jo Sperber, well, I think we talked about it maybe on Trek Talking or maybe it was the last Stunt Trek when we were talking about Studer School, which you saw at the drive-in. I remember you telling me this.
Saw it at the drive-in with Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks.
She was pregnant at that time. And this stunt coordinator wanted to get a different stunt double. And Wendy Jo Sperber said, no, Leslie Hoffman is my stunt double. Then he tells her that he couldn't get a hold of me. Wendy gets a hold of me and says, and I won't say his name, has so-and-so gotten in contact with you yet? You know, I'm doing a movie and I want you to be my stunt double. And I said, no. So I got in contact with him and I guess he was screwed. I mean, he had to use me and he also tried to hurt me two different times on that movie.
Wow, Hollywood can be pretty backstabbing, huh?
Yeah.
Well, we are going to take a very quick commercial break here. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very quick, very important message.
Hi, this is Eric from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction themed podcast on the internet. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and related sci-fi content, and we want to hear from you. Call into the show Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on the East Coast, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinions. We have faith that you'll call.
And we're back. And that number, of course, is 646-668-2433. It's the same number for Stunt Trek. It's the same number for Trek Talk. And it's the same number for Comic Corner. And it's the same number for Star Wars Legion, The War Room. All four podcasts, one great number. Put it in speed dial, 646-668-2433. And call. We'd love to hear from you. Oh, and by the way, the Leslie Hoffman is also on Stunt Treks with us. I mean, not only on Stunt Treks, but she's also on Trek Talking on Thursday night with us. So you guys can call Trek Talking and talk to Leslie as well. So just wanted to throw that in there. So back to Blood Fever. So after Neelix goes down the precipice and you try to catch him, you both go down, right?
Correct. Which they had a pad below, you know. So, I mean, George and I just fell into the pad. We let go of the rope. We both slid down the rope. It just speeds right through the carabiner, and we just both fell to the stunt pad below, and the stunt was done. I'd like to go back for a moment, was that I was concerned about, you know, the whole rigging of this, and you've heard me mention his name several times, Tom Morga. He was actually working on Jurassic Park, probably part two. Well, I don't know. Which one had the hanging bus?
Part two.
Okay. So he was at Universal working on Jurassic Park, but he had a call time later. We were at Paramount. He's at Universal. They're not that far apart from each other, 20 minutes maybe. He actually came down to Paramount to look at the rigging, and he told the special effects man, okay, I think we need another anchor here and this here and that there. And, I mean, he basically set up the rigging for the stunt. So I just want to say that, you know, Tom was a part of it. So later either that day or the next day after the stunt was done, I'm talking to Tom about, you know, what happened with my foot, but we still got the stunt and all that. And I said, the director was just so nice. He was so friendly to us. And Tom says to me, Yeah, Andy's always that way. And I'm going, Andy? You mean Andy Robinson was the director? Yes, you didn't know that?
Well,
I've never seen Andy out of Garrick's makeup.
You mean Andy Robinson, a.k.a. Garrick from Deep Space Nine?
Right. He was the director for the Voyager episode, and I didn't recognize him because I'd only seen him in makeup.
That's too funny.
Yeah. I mean, had he come over as Garrick, I would have gone, oh, it's Andy. It was here I'm going, oh, what a nice director. He's so kind to the actors. Well, he's an actor. Of course he's kind. I shouldn't say of course he's kind to an actor. But at least when you have an actor director, I think they know more what an actor is going through or a stunt person is going through. So he was wonderful on the set.
Yeah, I agree because I think that I'm not an actor and I'm not a director and I'm not a stunt person, but I am a Star Trek fan. And I think you're onto something because some of the best episodes of Star Trek are directed by actors like Jonathan Frakes, for instance. He's directed three episodes of Discovery, and the three episodes that he directed are just outstanding. Whenever I see his name as director, you know you're going to get something good because I think you're right. I think he knows how to relate to actors because he's been there. And they know how to get the shots they need and what they need without coming off as, you know, a pompous ass or anything like that. And I think that actors might – I'm making this up. I don't know this for a fact. You could probably answer this question. But I think that maybe actors respect another actor who's directing – in a different way than they do as a director who just directs but doesn't act, you know?
Yeah. I feel that there's some directors out there that treat us like puppets or, you know, okay, you're going to fall. Who cares what happens? You're a stunt person. You're hired. You're going to fall. You know, and yet you have, like I say, someone like Andy and you know, he gently walks through it with us. This cliche just popped into my head is that as a joke, you always hear in spoof things, actors saying, what's my motivation? Well, some people usually don't ask that question. I'm about to fall. What's my motivation? You let go of the rope?
You don't want to hit the floor? There's a truckload of stunt eggs at the bottom
out.
Of the cliff. You don't want to hit all those stunt eggs?
Right, they should have had crates of stunt eggs below. Just another shout out is when, I don't know if it's included in the clip, if you see the episodes, maybe, when they look over the edge of the cliff and it just looks like, you know, 100 feet down, that's courtesy of Dan Curry because he was the CGI special effects artist, the man who also invented the bat lift. Like I say, it's all interconnected.
Wow, he created the bat lift too.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Oh, he's a martial arts expert. I mean, I got to go to his house like for Christmas parties and he'd have weapons displayed and, well, besides real ones and then like bat lifts and things like that. I mean, he just knew what a balanced weapon was while, no offense to props, you know, they would make an axe or something, you know, it would look futuristic, it would look great, but it either would be top heavy or bottom heavy, which would make it very hard for a stunt person to use in a fight. While Dan Curry, when he created the bat lift, it is so perfectly balanced. I mean, you can put one finger in the center hole, the center of the center hole of a bat lift, and it'll just stay there. It won't tip to the right or the left. It is perfectly balanced.
Now, speaking of bat lifts, I have a rubber one that I wear with my Klingon costume, but did you ever actually have a bat lift battle or a bat lift duel when you were either on Deep Space Nine or on Voyager? Did you actually get to use that bat lift as a weapon in a stunt?
Unfortunately, no, not on an episode, but Tom and I did a live show where we did do a bat lift fight. So, yes, I have fought with a bat lift. Have I ever been filmed fighting with a bat lift? No.
Wow, that would be that. You know what? That would be something to see. We'll have to have you do a bat lift demonstration one of these days.
I'd probably kill myself.
I've left friends.
Hold the bat lift, and you know they want to swing it the way Worf does, or you see Klingons do it, and they think they're doing good, and then they smack themselves in the side of the head with it.
Yeah, it's. You know, even walking around with a rubber one at conventions, it's a very cumbersome weapon, and even made out of foam. You know, how do you carry it without it getting in the way? You know, it's a pretty big piece of equipment, anyways. But it looks so cool.
Well, yeah, no, the correct way to carry the bat lift is. I'm almost picturing a rifle, but let's see, how do I explain it? A bat lift has three holes in it. So what you do is you hold on to the bottom hole. If you had it resting against your shoulder, the back end, not the pointed end, if you had it resting against your shoulder, you would be holding on to the bottom hole with the points pointing outward, and it's just really easy to carry that way.
That's exactly how I carry my rubber one at conventions when I'm a Klingon. It's the most comfortable way to do it.
Next time we get together, bring your bat lift, and we'll see if we can get it set up.
maybe at Trek Conderoga.
Yeah.
So anyway,
A bat lift is sort of like a baton, you know, like the way a woman or a man does that kind of figure eight with a baton. I mean, you can do that with a bat lift, but you got to practice. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's when people hit themselves in the head with it.
Yeah, it just looks cool when you're dressed up as a Klingon with a bat lift. So I like my bat lift. So back to Blood Fever. So actually, you actually got to pun far in this particular. Well, you got to set up the pun far, right?
Well, you know, the parts that I did the stunts in, Torres definitely was, if you want to call it, infected, or definitely had Pom-Far. So if you really were to count how many people in Star Trek history had Pom-Far, I don't even know if you might need two hands, but that's about it. I mean, you know, it's not that many characters in the whole franchise of Star Trek have really been through Pom-Far.
No,
I'm one of the lucky ones.
Spock did it twice, once as old Spock and once as young Spock in Star Trek III. Savick helped him through that with the finger stroking deal. I think Tuvok may have gone through it on Voyager. Alana Torres.
And Warrock.
Yeah, that
and
other
Torres.
Vulcan dude.
Yeah, well, like I say, it's supposed to be a Vulcan. Why? why a half human, half Klingon would get it is beyond me. You know, why wouldn't there be more humans or more other alien species being touched by Vulcans also contracting Pom-Far? Again, you know, I used to question sometimes why, well, okay, now we're way off on a different, back to Deep Space Nine on Covenant, when Guldakot opens up the door on Impact Nor to make, and I can't think of her name, to make the Bajoran go out the door. Like I say, the episode is Covenant. It's when she gave birth to a half Cardassian, half Bajoran baby. And Guldakot's trying to get rid of her.
I remember that one.
Okay, so he's trying to get rid of her, and he puts her in the airlock, and he starts to open up the airlock, and she smashes against the door, which is me, and her scarf goes out through the very thin crack of the opening of the door into outer space. And I asked, at that time, the production manager was Lou Race. I said, you know, why is it just her scarf? Why wouldn't her whole body be sucked out into space? And he said, because the script said so.
It's funny you should mention that, because one of my favorite scenes is a movie, we're getting off topic again, but that's okay. It's a movie called Jason X, Jason, Friday the 13th, Jason X, where Jason goes to space. And this Marine shoots a hole. They had guns in space. Don't ask me why, but they did. Bullet hole in the side of the ship. This girl that Jason's trying to kill with the machete, he's chasing her around the ship, she gets locked in the room. And there's a little bullet hole in the side of the ship, and she's hanging on to this railing by her fingers. And just before she lets go, and she says, oh, man, this sucks on so many levels. And she lets go, and then the camera switches to the outside, and she goes through that hole and comes out like spaghetti through that little tiny hole on the other side of the ship.
And that's correct. That's what would happen.
Right, that's what would happen, exactly.
So that's why I asked. How come the scarf comes off her neck, but she doesn't get sucked out the hole? Because the script said so.
That used
to be the pat answer when I'd have questions like that.
That's what I always. That's how come they didn't do that? Because it was in the script. That's why. So Leslie, which between Deep Space Nine and Voyager, which show did you have the most fun working on? Which one did you enjoy the most, Deep Space Nine or Voyager?
Ooh.
Now we're getting
Interesting question. I mean, I feel like we were more of a family. Well, we were a family on both Deep Space Nine and Voyager. Voyager was fun because we had the promenade that we could run all over the place with. I mean, you know, it just was this ridiculously huge set, and it was just so fun to run through cargo. Well, they were on different sound stages. You'd be in cargo, you'd be in ops, you'd be on the promenade. I mean, so the set of Deep Space Nine was a lot more fun to run around on. I mean, boy, that's a hard question because basically the same stunt people on Deep Space Nine were the same people on Voyager, but it seemed like maybe it was because there were more group stunt people episodes on Deep Space Nine as opposed to Voyager. Maybe that's the answer. You know, you might be with 10 or 20 people or at least 5. On Voyager, you're either by yourself or you might be with a couple more.
Well, the odd thing, the strange thing about that, what you just said, is that when Deep Space Nine first came out, a lot of fans were complaining and whining and pissing and moaning that they hated the show because it was on a space station and not on a ship. But if you think about it, if you go back and you watch Deep Space Nine, you'll be surprised to find out just how much of Deep Space Nine does not take place on Deep Space Nine, whereas Voyager, probably 90% of the episodes take place on the ship. Deep Space Nine.
Right.
Didn't.
I mean, unless they beam down to a planet or another person's spaceship on Deep Space Nine, you had the whole space station, you had the Defiant, you had the one episode with the Valiant, you had the wormhole that you were going through, you had, well, I'll call it location shots or planet shots. I mean, as you said, it seemed like, and again, it's a hard question to answer, but maybe that's it. Maybe talking about it is that most of Voyager seemed to be on the ship, which made it very confined. While Deep Space Nine, you were all over the place. You didn't know where you were going to be in the next week. Hey, I was in, I was at Vix. I was in the holodeck, you know, at Vix in Bada Bing, Bada Bang.
Now, did you ever have any Klingon gawk at the Klingon restaurant? Is that on the promenade?
Say that again. Did I ever have?
Did you ever have any Klingon gawk at the Klingon restaurant that's at the promenade?
Sorry, no.
No.
I
remember there was a Chinese. There was a Klingon restaurant that opened up on the promenade a little ways down from Parks.
Oh. Yeah, no, sorry.
No.
Let's get back to Blood Fever, because the second thing I did was the fight between Vorak and Torres, that they would get that, whatever, that emotion out of themselves and get out of Pon Farr. And it was interesting because, we intercut that stunt fight. And again, it's posted on both pages, is that there's this one scene, and I saw it immediately, and I get embarrassed really easily. I'm watching the episode, and Vark goes back towards the camera. You know, he's getting hit or pushed by Torres, and you see this hand come up against Vorek's back. And that's my hand. I was safetying him, and it got in on camera. So this unknown hand appears from nowhere, but most people who watch the episode don't even know that, you know, like, wait a minute, what's that hand doing there? But I have a still shot. It's out of focus, but I have a still shot that if you look at it, you'll see the hand against Vorek's back, and you'll see Torres in the background behind Vorak. So, I say, whose hand is that?
it's the Leslie Hoffman's hand.
But the other thing hand. About that was, okay, so when we did the rappelling, I had the suit zipped up. And, you know, I knew the fight was going to, it was a different day, but I knew that there was going to be a fight. And I had these really big, thin elbow pads and knee pads that I could have put on underneath the suit. Except we get to that day, and the producers decide, well, it's going to be sexier if she has the top of the suit unzipped and down by her waist, you know, and then she just has that not quite spaghetti strap, but thin strap tank top on. So now I'm fighting with exposed arms and hitting the ground. And you can't really pad yourself if it's just your arms. But the other thing is, back to unions, is that there is a section of the makeup union that does your face. But that day when all of a sudden I had to have the bare arms, they had to bring in a special second makeup person to do body makeup. They had to, you know, tan down my arms. So I had two makeup people that day.
Wow. And what exactly does an arm makeup specialist do?
They just had one of those, there's probably a proper word for it, but it's one of those like spray guns, you know. I think they're using it in makeup nowadays for regular people that, you know, in other words, to get a smooth, even color, they take this metal spray gun and they just kind of, you know, and that's it, is they sprayed my arms. I mean, they didn't take like a jar of makeup and a pad and started wiping it on my arms. They, you know, they sprayed my arms with the darker color.
Wow. And the makeup artist that did your face couldn't handle that? I don't.
Right. Right. There's one artist getting paid to do makeup on my face, and there's another artist getting paid because they sprayed my arms tan.
Wow. I want to be a spray tan arm guy. I can handle that. With stunt eggs.
Right, with stunt eggs. I'm just trying to, I'm kind of checking my notes. Is that, I don't know, I guess I, so quickly going back to the rappelling scene is, it's really funny because as you see the back of Torres going down the side of the cliff, and she says something like, you know, this is really getting me hot, or I'm really excited about this. Well, that's me going down the cliff. It's a voiceover of Roxanne Dawson saying those words, and they just overlaid it on the stunt as if that body on the cliff was saying it. So that's kind of funny. When Neelix, let's see, I'm trying to think which way it would. When Neelix is talking to Torres, there's a close-up. That's me actually going by him. You just see the back of her hair as she goes by him. That was me. And then when I fall and I fall past Tom Paris, that's me doing the fall past him. Then there's a scene in the stunt fight where Tuvok and Chakotay are standing there watching the fight. They're probably getting their kicks seeing this woman beat up this guy. But anyways, when you see that, when you see Torres and Vorok go by Tuvok and Chakotay, that actually is me. That is not Roxanne Dawson. But like I say, it's hard to see. I mean, that's why you need a really good stunt double and you don't need a Spaceball stunt double.
So that's funny. So Leslie, when you're stunt doubling her, do they put you in full Klingon makeup for that, or even though they only see the back of your head?
Oh yeah, I'm in full. It takes about an hour and a half to get into full makeup. We discussed this a while back, is that they didn't want to spend money on, they kept changing her wig season from season. One season it'd be kind of have, well, I don't want to say curls, waves in it. And another season it might be straight, another season might be a little longer, another season might be a little shorter. Those wigs were $4,000 to $5,000 a piece. So they weren't about to make a second stunt wig for me. So what would happen was when I was doubling her, I would technically inherit her wig that she wore the year before. So I was wearing a $3,000 to $4,000 wig when I was doubling her. It just was last year's model.
Now, did you ever get a chance to meet her on set, or was she not there when you were doing the stunts for her character?
Oh, no. You know, interestingly enough, that is a question that people will ask. And some people work with actors all the time. I mean, you know, yes, I definitely worked with Roxanne. And she might say, well, do this or do that. Or you know, she talked to me. I mean, she, Wendy Jo Sperber talked to me all the time. It was very interesting when I did Flintstones Viva Rock Vegas. You know, I was told that Joan Collins can be just so, well, using a better nice word, is she can be such a diva. And yet, when I was doubling her on the set, well, it was kind of funny. She didn't come up to me, but she sent someone over to me saying, Joan says that, you know, you're doing a good job or you're doing this right, but could you maybe do this with your arm or something like that? But basically, it was positive feedback from Joan Collins.
Yeah, and of course, Joan Collins was on Star Trek as well.
Oops, so say that again.
Cool.
You kind of blipped out there.
Yeah, she was on Star Trek.
Oh, she was on City of on the Edge of Forever.
Yep, City on the Edge of Forever, Captain Kirk's love interest.
Right.
See,
but
everything goes back to Star Trek.
What's that?
Everything ties back to Star Trek in one way or another.
Right. Well, except for Leslie Nielsen and Ricardo Montalban and Pierce and whatever, but yes, it's very interesting that you may have worked with somebody on one thing, or you know whatever that thing is called, the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon or 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I mean, if you're really working in Hollywood, you're probably only 1 degree, at most 2 degrees off of somebody that you're working with.
Now, Leslie, when you were either Deep Space Nine or Voyager, it doesn't matter, how would a typical, like say they're going to, the stunt for Blood Fever, how would that actually work? Would Andrew Robinson call up and say, well, you know, we have a stunt and we need Leslie to come in and do it? Or how would that actually transpire? How would you get from your house? How would you know about that whole thing? And how would that happen? Through an agent or through Paramount?
No. Stunt people are hired by the stunt coordinator, and the stunt coordinator was Dennis Matalone. And basically, most of Dennis's stunt team, or a good majority of Dennis's stunt team, we all worked out at this gym in like 1976. We didn't even belong to the Screen Actors Guild yet. You know, we were dreaming of becoming stunt people or union stunt people. I mean, we all knew we wanted to be stunt people. And Dennis is just a real family man. I mean, he still talks about Paul Stater's gym. And, you know, well, like you say, Tom was at Paul's gym, myself, Dennis. Another person that he used a lot was Chris Doyle. He used him a lot on Star Trek. Brian Williams, who was Data's double. I mean, we're all from the stunt gym.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, how nice to have someone remember his beginning days. I mean, I can think of one stunt person that doesn't even want to talk about that he went to Paul Stater's gym. So you have the other side of the coin. But Dennis is not that way.
Well, Leslie, believe it or not, another stunt trek has come and gone. Where does the time go?
I know. This is...
just flies right by. And
yeah.
This is our first Tuesday evening show. We're going to be on Tuesdays for the next 4 months. And then come October, we'll go back to our usual Sundays. But for the next couple of months, you're going to be listening to Stunt Treks with Uncle Jim and Dee Leslie Hoffman live on Blog Talk Radio every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So make sure you tune in for that. And the phone number is 646-668-2433. You can give us a call and ask Leslie a question and find out about Voyager, or Deep Space Nine, Blood Fever, anything. Just give us a call. We'll be here live for you guys every Tuesday night. Make sure you head over to Facebook, to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization fan page, and leave a message there. Just say hi. Tell Leslie you listened to the show and you liked it, or if there was a question, if you're one of those people that's too afraid to call because you don't want to be on the air, you don't want everybody around the world to hear your question. Maybe you think your question is a dumb question, but the only dumb question is the question you don't ask.
Correct.
Leslie and myself, we'll never make fun of you. We'll never say anything. If a fan calls and you have a question, Leslie will answer it. Absolutely. But if you're afraid, if you think your question for whatever reason is a dumb one, or you're just embarrassed to ask it, head on over to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page and ask Leslie right there. Leslie's really good with answering people personally and usually pretty quick too. So you can go over there and ask Leslie any question you want, or if you have an idea for a show, if there's something you want to hear Leslie and I talk about, if you have a suggestion, head over there to the Facebook page and just say, hey, how about you guys talk about this or that or stunt eggs or whatever. Drop us a message over there at the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization fan page, and we'll definitely get right back to you. Also, don't forget that Trek Talkin' is going to be live every Thursday night from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m., and Leslie will be on with me and my other Trek experts, and, of course, the number there is 646-668-2433. We're going to have James Colley from Trek Conoroga and our good friend Ray Tessie from Neutral Zone Studios down in Georgia. We're going to be talking about Star Trek fan films. We're also going to be talking about the new Twilight Zone episode, 6 Degrees of Freedom. And we're going to throw in a little bit of conversation about Avengers Endgame. That's going to be live Thursday night from 7:30 to 9:30. Make sure you tune in for that. And the number is 646-668-2433. We would love to hear from you. And you also want to stay tuned on the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization fan page, because we might have some big news coming up and we might need your help. So you want to make sure that you check frequently on the Facebook page, see if there's anything there that maybe you could give us some help with. And as more information comes out about that, I definitely will get that to you. So Leslie, we wrap up another episode of Stunt Trek. I hope you had a good time hanging out with Uncle Jim and chatting about Star Trek.
Oh, I always do. I love talking about Star Trek.
And we definitely will be hanging out on Thursday night, so make sure you guys tune in for that. Well, thank you very much, Leslie, for hanging out with me tonight. We'll see you again next Tuesday, same bat time, same bat channel. And as soon as we have the topic for next week's Stunt Trek, I will get it up on our Facebook page. So thank you very much, Leslie, for hanging out, and have a really good night.
You too, Jim.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Live long and prosper.